SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Οι νέοι πελάτες σας ακούν αυτή τη διαφήμιση τώρα. Τι θα τους λέγατε αν μπορούσατε για την επιχείρησή σας? Το SBS είναι ο πιο αξιόπιστος πολυγλωσσικός ραδιοτηλεοπτικός φορέας της Αυστραλίας. Οι ακροατές μας είναι πιστοί, ιδιαίτερα επικεντρωμένοι στα προγράμματά μας και έχουν υποστηρίξει αμέτρητες τοπικές επιχειρήσεις. Η δική σας θα είναι η επόμενη. Προσφέρουμε διαφημιστικά πακέτα για επιχειρήσεις όλων των μεγεθών. Η εμπειρή ομάδα πωλήσεών μας θα σας καθοδηγήσει στην διαδικασία και τη δημιουργία μιας εξαιρετικής καμπάνιας. Φέρτε την δική σας διαφήμιση ή αφήστε την ομάδα μας να το κάνει σε μία από τις 68 γλώσσες μας. Τι περιμένετε? Ξεκινήστε τη συζήτηση με το νέο σας κοινό σήμερα. Ηλεκτρονικό ταχυδρομείο sales@sbs.com.au.
Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά. Βρείτε περισσότερες ενδιαφέρουσες ιστορίες στο sbs.com.au/greek.
Ραδιοφωνία SBS, ελληνικό πρόγραμμα φίλες και φίλοι, στο μικρόφωνο μαζί σας με την επιμέλεια και παρουσίαση του επόμενου θέματος είναι ο Θέμης Καλός. Στο πλαίσιο του 42ου Ελληνικού Φεστιβάλ του Σίδνεϊ, την προσεχή 5η 21 Μαρτίου, αγαπητοί ακροατές, πραγματοποιείται εκδήλωση στο επίκεντρο της οποίας θα βρεθεί η ελληνική γλώσσα μας. Το κεντρικό ερώτημα που έχει τεθεί σε αυτή την εκδήλωση είναι: έχει μέλλον η νεοελληνική γλώσσα στην Αυστραλία? Πρόκειται επί της ουσίας για ένα σεμινάριο και συζήτηση με τον καθηγητή Τζόζεφ Λο Μπιάνκο. Ο κύριος Λο Μπιάνκο είναι ο καθηγητής ο οποίος συνέγραψε την Εθνική Πολιτική για τις Γλώσσες, η οποία εγκρίθηκε από την Ομοσπονδιακή Κυβέρνηση το 1987. Το 2021, δε, ο καθηγητής Λο Μπιάνκο εξέδωσε το βιβλίο με τον τίτλο «Φάρος», αναφορικά με την βιωσιμότητα της ελληνικής γλώσσας στην Αυστραλία. Το βιβλίο αυτό προέκυψε μετά από πρόταση του Συλλόγου Εκπαιδευτικών της Νεοελληνικής Γλώσσας στη Βικτόρια με την συνδρομή και άλλων φορέων. Η εκδήλωση της προσεχούς Πέμπτης θα είναι στην βιβλιοθήκη του Markville στην διεύθυνση 313 Markville Road στο Markville. Η συζήτηση με τον καθηγητή Λο Μπιάνκο θα είναι στα αγγλικά και η είσοδος είναι ελεύθερη. Εμείς έχουμε σήμερα μαζί μας τον καθηγητή Λο Μπιάνκο για μια συνομιλία γύρω από αυτό το μέγα θέμα. Professor Λο Μπιάνκο, firstly, thank you for accepting our invitation to have this discussion.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to join you, Thimi.
Professor, you were the author of the National Policy on Languages, which was published in 1987 and endorsed by the federal government of the time. Can you please tell us more about this document? What was its main content and why was it unique?
Oh, this is more than 30 years ago. It was the first ever policy on languages adopted by the federal government, like an actual policy. It was at the time in the United States and other places, they declared that it was the first multilingual policy in the world. And it was breaking with a long tradition of monolingualism in Australia. I mean, we had measures already for multilingualist support, such as SBS itself. But in terms of an actual explicit language policy that looked to do all the things that we tried to do in that policy, it was groundbreaking. And I was very pleased when the government decided to adopt it. And they obviously, we advocated it. And I was the author. I traveled all around the country consulting with communities, Aboriginal communities, immigrant groups, people involved with every aspect of culture and society and economy. And then wrote the document with the recommendations and tried to build the consensus to support it. So when it was adopted, it was really a big breakthrough. And after that, it received a lot of attention around the world. I mean, I think every one of your listeners will know that there's been a lot of pushback against these things since that time in Australia, but it was really the high water mark.
Professor, to what extent has the national policy document continued to guide policy on languages here in Australia?
That's a great question. I think it would be easy to misunderstand it because the policy itself was replaced in 1991 by a rival policy, the Australian Language and Literacy Policy, that was much more monolingual and promoting languages of trade rather than community languages, even though in my policy I did have support for trade and commerce as well, of course. But the principles that were in the 1991 policy were basically very heavily influenced by the work that we had done. And in different states of Australia at different times, when they produce a statement on language, you can still see the same logic, the same argument, the same principles there. So it's interesting. Ideas don't die easily. Ideas continue. They sometimes take a different shape, and maybe they're not always recognisable, but they're there. And people have analysed this from different points of view and concluded that it's still an influence. But I wouldn't say that it's the main principle anymore, because really it's a long time and other factors have come and gone. And we have a much more utilitarian logic today. And I think in the 1990s, a very big change happened. It would take too long to explain what was going on. But in the 1990s, Australia discovered English as a commercial export language through university courses. And this was how English had always been promoted globally by Britain in commercial courses. And so the whole export education industry was born at that time. And this really overwhelmed the multilingual principles we had before. You know, English has this unique historical role, dominating commerce and higher education really almost everywhere in the world, certainly in many places. And I think in the 1990s, governments started to exploit this commercially. And that, I think, is had a big effect on what happened later. And today, if you ask me what is another big influence, because language is enmeshed with everything in society, so we can't separate things. Today, the big influence will be artificial intelligence and the whole generative AI technologies, and these, which also have instantaneous translation devices built into them. So for some people, this represents a big challenge for language. But I think it represents a great opportunity for us to build community multilingualism and use these very sophisticated resources to support learning as well. But we can talk about that if you're interested. But I think that those changes have been so great that, you know, things from 30 years ago only have a general influence anymore.
Well, I do want to ask you, Professor, how would you describe the present situation regarding the teaching and use of languages other than English in Australia?
I think we are in a state of crisis, I'm sorry to say. With Greek, we see declining numbers in schools and an ageing population. We see this with all the post-war community languages and really with all languages over time. We see a return to the logic of assimilation in some quarters in Australia. We see commercial considerations, trade and business and strategic policy. These things is the main logic of policy choices. So in this context, I think we also have to note that COVID and the lockdowns had a big damaging effect on language enrolments all around the country. I assume a lot of your listeners in New South Wales are in New South Wales, so I hope they forgive me when I say I think the New South Wales policy needs to be developed a lot more. It's not the most innovative in the country. In Victoria, there's more effort for language teaching and more students take languages for longer. But I would still say languages are in trouble here. So I think generally the last 3-4 years have rung a serious warning bell, and people are starting to move away from the study and teaching of languages and believing that technology can substitute. And I think that that completely misses the point. And I think the importance of languages for cultural purposes is greater than ever. And so I feel optimistic. If we can build good arguments, I feel we can return to a strong support basis for languages.
A few years ago, Professor, you began to turn your attention to the particular issue of the modern Greek language here in Australia. Can you please tell us how did this come about?
Yes, it was a wonderful experience for me. The Modern Greek Teachers Association of Victoria invited me to a conference several years ago to speak about supporting languages in general, and we got into a good conversation about the particular problems and challenges of modern Greek. And I suggested to them, and they were very, very positive about it, that they should act proactively, because from what I could see of the statistics, Greek was losing a lot of ground in schools, and this decline has continued since. And they invited me to do some research to document this, and I did that over 2 years. I was a consultant overseas for the UN, so I was traveling away a lot and coming back and doing the study here. So, you know, it could have been done more quickly, but under those circumstances, it took 2 years. And eventually it ended up in a book called Pharos, which basically is meant to indicate a light to point the way to strengthen Greek again. I think Greek can return to being a very healthy, strong language in our community, but it's losing ground in families and in schools at the moment. So the report tried to say, and the book tried to say to the community, it's important to get organized and act to stop this decline. And I get on very well with that. My friends in the Greek Teachers Association, and they were very generous and decided to run a conference around the findings of my study. And out of that conference, we had a debate and decided to create a working group, which we call Pharos, the working group. It has about 12 community organizations within the Greek community in general. And we meet regularly. I'm still very actively involved with them, even though the research was finished now 2 years ago. We're very close colleagues, and we have a very united front, and we've taken some important action. I think you might remember that 3 years ago, Greek language, modern Greek, was threatened from the one university in Victoria that still taught it, La Trobe, and it was very strong community action that stopped that closure from going ahead, and now the language has been secured at La Trobe University. Later this year, we've got a conference to try and build beyond just that. We try to support schools where they're struggling to find teachers. We try to support early childhood programs to build a pathway from home to school. For the community, I've run sessions for families about how to raise children bilingually, because we know that many Greek families now are English speaking, and it's the Greek language is in the yaya, and you know, papu's generation no longer really the parents anymore. This is true of Italian and other main community languages. So we have to think differently. So if two parents who are stronger in English than they might be in Greek, how can they help their children to maintain the language, even if it's not being taught in their school? Well, there's many ways to do this. And so we have training programs around this. So we're taking action at the preschool level, the school level, and the university level, and the community. But we're all volunteers. So it's, we need support from community and businesses and other people interested in the language. It's an absolutely precious resource for Australia, and not just for the Greek community, but for the whole national community. So I hope that with my visit in Sydney, I know people are doing all these things already. I'm not trying to say we're exporting anything, but that we will have an interaction that will strengthen a national approach along these lines.
With your indulgence, Professor, I would like to insist on the book Pharos, which is one outcome of the research you just talked to us about. What would you say are the main messages of Pharos, the book, for those concerned about the situation of Greek language in Australia?
One of the main messages is you cannot depend just on the schools. Even though, you know, the language is declining in the schools, we need to increase the teaching of Greek, but we can't just leave it to the schools. We know all the research internationally and in Australia shows that there needs to be three, it's like a stool with three legs. We need family and community, that is within families, families that identify as Greek, even if maybe not both parents speak it or only one parent speaks it, or even sometimes when neither parent speaks it, but they identify as Greek or they want their children to know Greek. They can still do many things. So family support is essential. Then school support is critical, and the community and businesses, Greek businesses, the media, can do it. Now, we've got a model for this that I'll be talking about in at Marrickville Library on Thursday night in Sydney, and then also to the Greek Australian Society on Friday. There's a model for this action, coordinating between community, education, and family, and it's got to be at that level. I'll also be giving some comparisons from, say, Luxembourg and Canada. I mean, the phenomenon that we're talking about is not unique to Greek. It's not unique to Australia. It's just the inexorable pressure of living in a community as an immigrant group across generations, in which, you know, there has been a lot of assimilation pressure in the past and even today, and the passage of time and, you know, the need for children to make choices in schooling, etc. All of these things work against the retention of the language. And I think sometimes people in the community, because you might go to a club or listen to the radio, you think that things are strong and good. But in fact, when you look at the research, all the statistics show that it's an aging community, and with fewer and fewer language programs in schools every 2 or 3 years. So we have to take action now while it's still vibrant. I mean, there's still a very large community of Greek speakers in Australia, and Melbourne is a great Greek-speaking city in the world, so is Sydney. All of this is strong and positive. I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I actually feel optimistic, because I think it's a community that loves its language and will take the right action. But it's important to act soon.
Lastly, Professor, can I please ask you to briefly speak to us about yourself?
Well, I was born in Australia. My parents migrated from southern Italy, from Calabria, which, as you know, and you can hear from the words, the name of it has a classical Greek history as well as its Italian history, of course. It was both Greek-speaking in antiquity, and then under Eastern Roman or Byzantine rule remained Greek-speaking for many, many long, long periods of time. There is still small but significant community, a declining community of Greek speakers there, but who are very proud of their Greek, and it's a language, the Greek language, protected under the Italian constitution. There are school programs and research in this, and regular cultural and artistic festivals that keep strong connections with Greece going. My family was from a village which was ancestrally Greek, but not itself Greek-speaking. But we had a lot of Greek words in my home language of Calabrese. And I've traveled there many times and been to Greece several times. And I became very fascinated with how, you know, minority languages can survive in the modern world. And there are many models for doing this. My professional work, I started life as an economist. I did my first degree in economics, and I worked as an economist for some years, and political philosophy, economics and political philosophy. Then I became very interested in questions of language, partly because of the struggles of my parents with English. And I transferred to do what I call sociolinguistics, looking at language and society and language policy. And after the national policy was adopted, as you mentioned, in 1987, I received a lot of invitations to do this kind of work overseas. So I worked for long periods of time in Southeast Asia, in Europe, in many different parts of the world, and I've done research and teaching and publications on cultural and language challenges in the modern world in many parts of the world. And through that, the final thing I'll say is I developed a particular interest in conflict studies and how we can build more peaceful societies. I was working in Myanmar in particular, in Burma, for the UN, United Nations, on peace building and language policy, minority rights. So I was doing that while I was working with the Greek teachers in Victoria and connecting these two things. I see them as an extension of the same thing, the rights of communities to be able to maintain their cultural and linguistic distinctiveness as they participate in mainstream society. So in a way, that's been my career. I was a professor at Melbourne University. I'm now a professor emeritus there. I retired 2 years ago, but I still remain active in these fields and keep all my international connections going to the extent that I can.
Well, Professor, it was a mere pleasure discussing with you this very important topic. We thank you for being on SBS Greek language program, and we're looking forward to seeing you and listening to you and hearing you on Thursday.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that too, and to meeting you.
Θέλετε να ακούσετε περισσότερες ιστορίες σαν και αυτήν; Ακούστε στο Apple Podcast, στο Google Podcast, στο Spotify ή οπουδήποτε ακούτε podcast.